Thanks for checking out this bonus interview with Rita Ralston and Charles George for Performance Driven Giving. My name is Kent Sanders, and I'm a writer who collaborated with David Hancock and Bobby Kipper on the book. Just a quick note before we get to the conversation. You may notice that these interviews have a bit of a different feel than what you're used to hearing on a podcast interview or in another setting. The reason is because these have been edited for clarity and flow to let the material on giving really shine through. We appreciate you listening and hope you enjoyed this conversation with Rita Ralston and Charles George. So, Rita, tell me, how did the Ronald McDonald House begin? What is really the what's the origin of all of this? Because, and I'm honestly really curious about this, because how do you get from, you know, a fast food restaurant to then this whole other thing that obviously is connected, but it's a very, very different thing as well?
Yeah, it's a great story. It's a great story about the power of one that can then proliferate with collaboration and just explode into this whole worldwide system now of Ronald McDonald House Charities. It goes back to the early 70s, and there was a football player for the Philadelphia Eagles, Fred Hill was his name, and he had three daughters, and one of the girls developed leukemia. So they were there near the hospital, CHOP, Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and they could get in and out on a daily basis. And they had resources to manage all of this. But what they noticed going in and out of the hospital is that there were folks that were sleeping in their cars in the garage, or they were trying to sleep on chairs or sofas in the hospital, trying to stay close to their child who is hospitalized. But you know, there is no facility. If you're sustaining a long-term stay for your child, a hotel isn't really a viable thing, because no one sets money aside from when their child is ill, right?
Right.
So he worked with the Eagles and a friend of theirs that owned a McDonald's franchise. And what they started doing was selling the Shamrock Shake. That's where it all began. If you're familiar with the Shamrock Shake.
I am.
Yeah. And they raised a lot of money. And out of all of this and other collaborations and fundraising, the first house was opened in Philadelphia in 1974. Now, the idea that was started there by one family because of one child that put them in that place grew like wildfire, because if you were a level one trauma center and were doing a decent amount of pediatrics, you had the same issue. People were coming into your facility trying to access the best medical care possible for their child, and they had no place to stay except a hotel. And there are two things with that. It's not only the cost of staying in the hotel and buying the food and other things that you'll need, but it's also proximity. If your child is in the hospital, it's tough to leave them to begin with. But you don't want to be 10 miles down the road. You want to be as close as you can be. And I'll give you a good example from our house. I remember sitting in my office on the main floor, and the mom in the room above me got a call that her child was coding. Now, we're two blocks from the hospital. There's no place closer to that hospital than to have been here. And she was able to get there, and luckily things turned out okay with the baby. But proximity is huge. So our house started in the 80s, actually in 1981. So we're into our 41st year of service.
Wow.
Because of the same thing. Here we are at the University of Virginia. It's a major hospital within the state. Everyone was noticing the same thing. People were coming from 6 hours away, 10 hours away, even 2 hours away, and needed a place to stay. And so that's how we began.
And how did you personally get involved with Ronald McDonald House?
Serendipity. It really was. I had just finished up a decade or so with a private school nonprofit again. And I had started doing some of my old consulting gig that I've done over the years. And I picked up the newspaper, which at the time, it was, you know, right after the 2008 sort of 9 debacle with the economy. And there were a lot of foreclosures on things. And I was reading through the foreclosures, and this ad was misplaced from the Help Wanted right next to the foreclosures. And it said Executive Director Ronald McDonald House. And I thought, oh, I could do that. And so I called and interviewed, and here I am 11 years later. So,
wow, that's really cool.
Yeah, it was. I think it was meant to be.
So on an, excuse me, sorry, I got something in my throat this morning. So on a practical level, how does that work in terms of the house that you have? And you're going to have to forgive my ignorance, because I'm literally, I have a zero foundation of a knowledge, like with Ronald McDonald House. So I'm super curious about all this. How does it actually work? Do you buy an existing house that is for sale, or is sometimes a house totally built from scratch, or how does that work?
The one that we're in now and have been in since 1991, we built ourselves.
Gotcha.
And it has obviously a lot of rooms, 19 rooms, a large communal kitchen, offices, recreation area in the basement. So it's very much geared toward, you know, mission, what we do. When the house started, though, it was renting space, an old home, old Victorian home, on the other part of town, and it had eight rooms, but it was, and there, I think the Richmond house is still in a house of that ilk. So it depends on how you come into it.
Okay. So it can work both ways, just depending on the situation.
Mm-hmm. Now, okay. your area in St. Louis, I think there are four different houses, and they're large buildings. You have a huge Ronald McDonald House Charities complex there.
Okay. And I think that is close to Children's Hospital, I'm guessing.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of the Barnes Jewish Children's Complex, probably.
Mm-hmm. They okay. serve multiple hospitals.
Okay. We just drove by there yesterday. My wife wanted to go to IKEA, and that literally we go right past on off of Kings Highway, the huge hospital complex there. So how can someone establish a partnership with Ronald McDonald House? Let's say I'm a business or a corporation and I want to get involved. How does that actually happen? Do you just call up the person, the executive director of a house, and have a conversation, or is there different ways that it can work?
There are different ways. There are corporate donors that operate at the national level and seek to provide resources to all of the houses. For example, Georgia Pacific and Ecolab are wonderful partners with us. And twice a year, we receive a donation from them of income that are a huge help to, in operating the house. But on a local level, certainly just a call is how it can get started. Sometimes it's programmatically driven. In other words, I'll get one of my wild ideas, as Chuck knows about, of ways to expand mission and have further reach in the community. And so who fits into that? Who can help us do that? And who would have sort of a vested interest in helping us do that? Hmm. And so, you know, hopefully it comes about.
I love that. Okay, a couple more questions, and then Chuck, are you cool with being included in the book? I hadn't asked you before that, but if you want to share a bit about your story in a couple of minutes, I think that would really add a lot to this.
Yeah, anything I can do to help Rita, count me in. So,
okay, perfect.
And you and David also. So, absolutely.
Okay.
Whenever I can contribute. Sure.
Perfect. So, Rita, back to you. I feel like I'm doing a radio show here, which I love. I love radio.
Well, you'd be good at it.
The only problem is we don't have any 1980s music, which is my favorite music. So, it's the only thing missing. Maybe I'll include it in the book somehow. So, Rita, what would you say is the most satisfying part of your work with Ronald McDonald House?
Oh, gosh. That's a hard one, because there really are so many things that sort of make your heart smile, from getting to know parents over the time that they're here, and you develop a special relationship to them, hearing from parents afterwards. Hmm. That experience while they're here stays with them, and for them to remember us is just huge. I love that. I love seeing the children. I love getting employees committed to the mission. No, I don't want somebody looking at their watch. In fact, you're not going to last here very long if that's what you're doing, because it needs to be about mission. And so finding young folks in particular that get that,
okay,
get up about that, that's good for me.
How would you say that being a giving partner changes that person? Many times when we think about giving, we think about how the gift change, it comes from the giver and then it changes the person who's receiving it. But of course, as we all know, giving changes the person who's giving as well. What are some of the ways that you have seen giving impact the person who is making the donations or giving their time or somehow contributing to the mission of Ronald McDonald House?
You know, it's interesting. One of the great fundraisers and nonprofits is a lady named Kay Sprinkle Grace. And she wrote a sort of a seminal book years ago called Transformational Giving. And it was really more about that gift that changes the needle, right? That type of thing. But I love the phrase transformational giving because I do think it works not only for the organization, but for the donor. We have some folks that have given us hugely generous gifts. That is marvelous. That clearly keeps us going. But to watch the folks that give their best gift, which may be $5 or $10, that's really special to me. It's that part of humanity where you reach outside of yourself, where you turn the binoculars from looking at yourself to outside and you're looking at other people. And if your best gift is $5 and you've given that to me, I am over the moon. And you can see it. You know, one of the things we do as an activity is collect pop tabs. Do you know what pop tabs are?
Yeah, I do. My son has a huge box of those.
He's my friend. pop tabs. You know, I use it as when I meet and talk with children as an example of the fact that there's value in even the smallest thing. That little individual pop tab, you know, you step on it as you walk over the sidewalk. But when they mass, when you get them in large quantities, then we recycle them and it brings in money. But it mostly brings that person through the door because they want to contribute. They want to be vested. They want to be part of that feeling they get when they come across the threshold. And we go out of our way to be hospitable and appreciative of their effort. So from the pop tabs to the small gifts, it's all transformational.
Wow. I love that. I love that. Well, this is good stuff. We could actually do a whole book on this. So I love what you're doing. And one of the reasons that I love writing and doing these kind of projects is that I feel like I just get so blessed in the process, you know, and hearing about what other people are doing and how they're impacting the world. And this is great. This is really, really great stuff. So I appreciate you sharing all that, Rita.
Sure.
Now, Chuck, yep. Feel free to share anything that you like, your story with Ronald McDonald House, you know, as much or as little as you'd like. I know we didn't really prepare anything for this, but that's okay. If you're cool, just sharing whatever you'd like to. I would love to hear anything that you'd like to maybe include in the book.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, Rita's dedication to the families there was so paramount while I was there. Just her, like she said, everybody there, that entire staff is phenomenal, and how they go above and beyond for the families there. My wife was in the hospital for 6 weeks, pregnant. And so when our son had congenital heart disease, we knew this prior to him coming. And so she ran into health issues herself. So 6 weeks of bed rest. We really didn't know. We were transferred from a hospital in Richmond to UVA. And we were there for 2 or 3 weeks prior to him coming. He was delivered in an emergency surgery, C-section. So we really didn't have a lot of time to prepare, like, what's next? And so when we're there, we're like, what do we do next? He's born. He's got to have heart surgeries. He's going to be in the hospital a long time. my wife is experiencing all the things that happen when you have a child, plus all the additional stress and emotion that come with that. And so the UVA came to us and said, you guys can go get a hotel, but there's this other place called Ronald McDonald House across the street. I think the two of you would really enjoy going there if you're open to it. And so we didn't know anything about it. I'd heard about it. I didn't really know what Ronald McDonald House was. But again, not only is your life disrupted from a new child, but also it impacts the amount of work you can do also. So your financial means has been severed for the most part because we're focused on the child at this point. So income is sporadic at that point. And so they said it's closer to the hospital than any of the hotels. So just having access to the child, that was the first thing. But then they also, Rita, make sure everybody gets a meal. There's always food at the house. Different volunteers come in. That home-cooked meal, like we were in the hospital for 3 months that first time, knowing there was going to be a home-cooked meal each night, like that alone in and of itself, like the hospital food, UVA does a really good job with it. But there's nothing like that home-cooked meal. And I used to look forward to that just every night. You know, I would try to get there between 6 o'clock or so just to, and even if I couldn't, it was there in the refrigerators or, you know, it was still warm when I got there. So it's little things, meeting with families. Like when we're in the hospital, we're so stressed out over everything, focusing on our own child. But then when we go there, we meet other families, so then we can connect with them. We can hear what they're experiencing. A lot of the families that I met there, I'm still friends with them on Facebook. I still get to see their kids grow up. Till unintended benefit that I didn't even realize when we friended each other on Facebook while we were there. The very first time I met Rita, I was on my way to the hospital, and she was walking three potential donors through the house. And as like I've been in marketing my whole life, and I didn't know who they were, but I could tell the way she was giving them a tour. So I just stopped and I said something really nice. I don't remember what I said at this point. And Rita said, I didn't pay him to say that. And I just knew it would help her with what she was doing. And I was just grateful. The next day, Rita came to me and thanked me for saying that. She said it made a difference in me stopping and chatting with them for a few minutes. So from that moment on, Rita and I have been friends. And I would come down and each morning I would make my way to the Ronald McDonald House the night before, and my wife would stay with Thomas, and I would come down each morning. I'd head straight into Rita's office, and she found out how much I love marketing, and she'd start talking to me about the house. And that was my escape. Like that was the one thing that was somewhat normal for me. And she loved talking to me and different things she could do for the house, and I always enjoyed chatting with her. And so that's how we became friends. Like my wife would eventually call me after 30 minutes or so, like, are you coming over here? So Rita could work and I could relieve her. But yeah, that was how Rita and I became friends. And after Thomas was, after he came home from the hospital, we had another heart surgery to go through, but we also had other visits. And one of the things Rita told me was she always loved seeing the kids coming back, and she always didn't get to see them. So every time we had an appointment with Thomas at UVA, I always made it a point to let Rita know, hey, if you got a few minutes, we'd love to come by. And one of my favorite photos is I brought him by one day, and she had just gotten these new Ronald McDonald House shoes, and she'd just gotten them in the day before. And so Thomas was the first one to wear them. And so we got pictures of him sitting on the steps with laughing with these huge shoes on.
Huge so, red shoes.
So, but just her love for all the families and her dedication. And I told Rita then, I was like, this is a lifelong relationship between us. I'm so grateful for the opportunities. And so, and it has been. And so we went, whenever we had a appointment, even if it was an overnight stay, or she always tried to find a way to find a place for us to stay afterwards. So that dedication again, just amazing. And we were always so grateful for it. And again, she didn't have to, but even if she didn't have a place in the Ronald McDonald House, she would find other places around town with relationships she had with other organizations. So she was always looking out for us, you know, just incredibly grateful for it. And then that last surgery, my son did not survive the third heart surgery. And so he was three. And then the lows of that were terrible. And so I started looking at how do families deal with this type of grief. And it was giving back. It was one of the ways that people process that. So I immediately called Rita and I was like, let's start a podcast that helps families. And that led to me helping her with a lot more marketing stuff. And it was another huge way I was healing. And so I was always grateful for that also. And since then, you know, we've maintained our friendship, and any way I can contribute or help her, I always try to do that. And so that's what led us to this call here. So,
wow.
Anyway. So anyway, totally grateful. So lifelong relationship for sure. I think of her as my second mom, no doubt. That's how I introduced her to David. I was like, anyway, so you can't have a more glowing endorsement than that, for real. So anyway.
So then both of you do host a podcast together. Is that correct?
We did. We finished it in the late summer of 17. And it was interesting because we had 59 episodes at that point, and we stopped because one of the former house moms was also doing it with us, and her son was going into surgery. Okay. So we didn't know how the outcome of that was going to be. So we put it on hiatus. I have not put a nickel into it. And it's still, the other day we had 60 downloads, thousands and thousands of downloads a year. Within 2 weeks of starting the podcast, we were in 36 foreign countries and all of the United States, all 50 states. And I think the appeal of it was the fact that it was like a Andy Rooney, Judy Garland movie. Let's give a show. I'll make the costumes. We'll do it in the barn. I mean, it was that kind of thing. We did it on a nickel. And it's just real low key. It's just people talking to people. We interviewed doctors, we interviewed nurses, social workers, lots of other families. And I'm hoping to get back to it soon. There are a lot of other topics that I want to explore. So I think it meets a need, a free resource.
Well, I went and I did the research on it, and that no other Ronald McDonald House was doing a podcast at the time. And so that was the reason why. And since other ones have started this, you know, they've done their own now, but we were the first, to my knowledge, we were the very first one to do it. And anyway, so yeah, so it was great. Like Rita said, it didn't take long for it to take off and for people to really build a following with it. And so anyway, but it's still there. Like people can still listen to it. As Rita said, it's still available.
Wow.
So it was Rita, it was me, and it was a mom. So it was a mom's perspective, a dad's perspective, and Rita's perspective running the house. So, and we would interview doctors and nurses and parents and families. And I just wanted to, the idea behind it was like, you know, I've never been through anything more stressful than what this is. So just having a resource where families that are going through it can hear stories of other families of what they've experienced, just to provide some hope, provide some inspiration, maybe help them in processing some of the stress or just different opportunities they can do. Or, and just with the three of our perspectives on it, you know, that was kind of the idea behind it. And, you know, Rita was incredibly supportive of it when I approached her about it. So, yeah, I didn't realize she wanted to be on it initially. You know, she was like, it started off with the mom and I, and Rita's like, anything I can do to help support the two of you doing this. And we had met in the hospital. We were both staying at the Ronald McDonald House. Both of our sons had been through their surgeries when the mom and I met. And so we had just stayed in touch through that. And when I approached Rita about it, I was like, we're starting this podcast. And she's like, how can I support you? I'm like, do you want to be on it? And she's like, I'd love to be on it. And that's how the whole thing started. It was so organic. It was great. So,
It's called Walking with Families, and on iTunes and Stitcher and on the net. So
fantastic. Well, if you ever decide to pick that up again, I know that would really bless a lot of people. So obviously I'm a big fan of podcasting too. I've been doing podcasting for a long time, and man, you can reach so many people through a show. Mm-hmm. It's so interesting because, and I'm sure both of you have had this experience where people will tell you, oh, I listened to this episode or that episode and really loved it and shared it or whatever. And you think to yourself, I had no idea you even knew I did a podcast. You know, and right. That's just one of the cool things about it.
Right. You're absolutely right. It reaches a phenomenal number of people, and you just don't know how it touches them.
Yeah.
But we're happy to put it out there. It's good airspace.
Now, Chuck, I didn't ask this before. How do you know David Hancock?
So David and I, I've been working with a lot of authors, helping them build their audiences and primarily email lists for the most part, and then monetize those lists. And then one of the other publishers I was working with introduced me to David and said, I think the two of you are really get along. And we have been just awesome friends from the moment we met. And so I'm helping him. I've helped David launch two newsletters with Morgan James, like one with Performance Driven and one with Morgan James itself. So focusing on building the list from that, and working with a lot of his authors and supporting, you know, they're doing a really good job with acquisition. So this is another way that we can support them in promoting their books and still providing value to the other authors. So, so David and I are just getting started, which is awesome. And just him and Susan have been awesome to Claire and I, and I think the world of the two of them. And so we were at dinner and he was like, I need another person for the book. Do you know of anybody else? I'm like, I know Rita would love to do this for real. So it was a quick text. She said yes, and here we are. So
cool. Very cool. Well, it sounds like you and I need to have a conversation too, because I work with a lot of authors. So I primarily do ghostwriting and work with writers and different things with that. So yeah, I would love to sometime hear more about what you do with authors and helping them with marketing, because that's a massive need. It really is.
Yeah, well, it's lots of fun. And you know, I've built so many lists over the years. Like David and I were talking, and just over the last, since my son died, which was 6 years ago in August, I was just going back, adding up all the lists I built, like combined, and it's well over 100,000. I think I'm at between 125 and 135. Some people I took from 56 up to, you know, 35,000, some 25, some non. I've done it with nonprofits. I've done it with individual authors, and now I'm helping David with his. And so anyway, it's just something that I just enjoy doing it. I see it's not something that happens right away. You know, it's like the podcast. It took us time to build that audience. But then, as Rita said, people are still listening to it. You know, it's like an evergreen resource. So it's always there. We always get back and add to it. So that's kind of the way I look at email. And, you know, David launched his book afterwards, and an email list is the same thing. Like it's such a valuable resource that we can tap into and build relationships with people. So anyway, that's primarily what I'm doing. And then we use the relationships to monetize it. And so, so anyway, that's what David and I are working on together, and I'm happy to be a part of it. And anyway, I'm grateful that you're including Rita in this, especially because, as I said, anytime I can help her and support her with Raw McDonald House, I'm always count me in on that one. So
I love it.
No doubt. So.
Well, thank you both for taking time for doing this. This has been fantastic. This is one of the most fun interviews that we've done for the book.
Cool.
It really isn't. And they all have been great, but there's really something special about what you're doing with the Ronald McDonald House that really gets to the heart of what this whole book is about. So I appreciate you both taking time to do this.
Well, before we go, I got to tell you, one of the Rita's projects where she said she's always trying to serve families is when I was there, she said, I want to start a library that families can check out books. And so that library is real life. Like she brought that to fruition. It is there in the house, and I don't know, I'll let Rita tell you more about it, but she wanted to have a library in the Ronald McDonald House so people had access to books. So anyway, another connection there for you. So,
but that's cool. I love it.
Very cool. Very, very cool. So seeing it come together, like Rita doesn't do anything like let's just do this okay. Like, everything you think.
Which makes it three times more difficult. But
but she always pulls it off. So, yeah. No doubt. Yep. So
yeah. Rita, what did you do for that? Did you just pull together book donations and then have somebody, you know, organize it into a library, or how did that work?
This was great. We had just renovated the house. It was in 2013-14. And in doing the redesign, I moved the laundry room to a different location near an exterior wall. And it left this room in the sort of the core of the basement. And the architect put down gaming room. And I'm too old. I just see no socially redeeming value in gaming. And I said, I'm not doing that. And so I contacted Barnes & Noble, and this wonderful lady worked with me, and they made us their beneficiary, the annual book drive or donation drive, which they do each Christmas time, holiday time. And we did that for 2 or 3 years, and basically wow. We received of about $40,000 worth of brand new books. And it's wow. Everything from board books for the little kiddos to beginning readers, chapter books, teen books, adult books, cookbooks. It's pretty neat. So, And I have to say, if I had to close it down, because I got a little bit of pushback from some members of our board, that it was not a good use of space because people aren't in there all the time. We had a mom check in. I'll tell you the story real quickly. She had a teenage daughter. Daughter was experiencing severe headaches. Child was very far off the spectrum and had a number of issues. I didn't even know if we could keep them in the house because the child had so many issues. Child was eventually hospitalized and diagnosed with a brain tumor. Mom was a voracious reader. She would leave every day with two books under her arms because she'd go over to the hospital and read. And I thought, this is wonderful. About 6 weeks into her stay, Mom herself was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer.
Wow.
Read. I am convinced that library being saved her mentally from processing all that she was going through. If I had to shut it down tomorrow, it would have been worth it for that one mom and child. So libraries are transformative too.
I completely agree. Wow. Yeah. Well, that story's close to my heart because my wife worked for 10 years at Barnes & Noble and, you know, had a good experience there and always really liked that company. So I'm really glad that they were able to, you know, arrange it to be able to make those donations. That's really cool.
Yeah. It's a wonderful program. They do it every year for nonprofits. And it's basically the customers coming in and buying the gifts and doing it, but they provide access, and it was marvelous for us.
Nice. I love it. We hope you enjoyed this conversation with Rita Ralston and Charles George, and encourage you to check out the other interviews and the bonus content for Performance Driven Giving.